From the Richmond Inquirer, we have advices of the execution of the conspirators of John Wilkes Booth. They are all described as dying penitent. Mrs. Surratt died quickly, without struggle. Secretary Seward's attacker, Lewis Payne Powell, died a horrible death, the knot having slipped from behind his ear to the back of his neck, so that suffocation was a slow process. The entire affair seems to have been a cruel performance. The idea was prevalent that the sentence would be commuted at the last moment. There is great astonishment that the extreme sentence has been carried out at the hands of this government. The fault for this cruelty lies at the feet of one man, the man who signed the order of execution and sentenced her to death, Andrew Johnson, President of the United States.
Stanton leads that sheep to slaughter, and I'm the one with the goddamn noose around my neck. I want him gone, Wells. I want him gone by the end of the day.
It's not advisable, Mr. President.
The people are calling for a head on a spike. If I don't give them Edwin Stanton's, they'll storm the gates of the White House looking for mine.
As I counseled you, sir, the time to fire Stanton was before the tribunal ever began, not now in its bloody aftermath, and not with Mary Surratt's blood so freshly on your hands.
Then what do you suggest I do?
The people of this country have short memories, Mr. President. In time, they will forget all about Mary Surratt and your role in her execution.
That's the Richmond Inquirer dragging me through the mud, Wells. The people of the South are never going to forget this.
They will if you give them the gift of universal amnesty. The tribunal failed, sir. Stanton failed to prove his conspiracy. The path for amnesty is as clear now as it's ever been.
He'll fight me on it every step of the way.
Stanton's a beaten dog, Mr. President. If you put him down, his friends in Congress will rally to his side and block the way for your agenda. But if you collar him and you tie him to the front steps of the White House, you can rest easy knowing he'll never bite you again.
What about Ella Starr? He can still bite me with her.
That's not entirely true, sir. My friends tell me Edwin Stanton's already placed the collar around his own neck. All you have to do now is bring him to heel.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
1865 is supported by you. Hi, I'm Lindsey Graham, executive producer of 1865. I'd like to ask you a favor. If you're enjoying 1865, consider supporting it with a $5 monthly pledge. If you'll join us at 1865podcast.com, you'll get the entire original series, bingeable right now, as it appeared on Stitcher Premium last year, completely ad-free. You'll also get early access to episodes of the new rewritten and reworked series. That's the one you're listening to right now, also ad-free. And in addition to that, supporters get transcripts annotated by the writers with more fascinating historical detail, a free copy of the original score to 1865, and special bonus segments that dive deep into our characters' history and motivations in their own words as read by the cast. But I hope the best perk of becoming a supporter of the show is that you will be helping us create the next chapter in our audio storytelling. There are so many stories to tell, from 1765 to 2065, and your support is critical to our success. So please, go to 1865podcast.com and become a patron. Help us continue our work bringing history alive by going to 1865podcast.com.
Mr. Stanton.
Mr. Wells, what are you doing here?
You're coming to the cabinet meeting later this afternoon, yes?
Yes, of course I'll be attending. Why?
Shame about Mary Surratt.
Yes.
I never imagined I'd see the day a woman would lose her life at the hands of this government. It's a tragedy.
What do you want, Wells?
Here. The President requested I hand-deliver this proposal myself. Since we'll be finalizing the details of President Johnson's reconstruction plan, he's asked that each cabinet member thoroughly review it.
I don't need to review it, Mr. Wells. I am its author.
You're mistaken, sir. President Johnson has made some revisions to your plan. He gave me the honor of telling you myself, an honor in which, I must admit, I am currently deriving a considerable amount of pleasure. Good day, sir. I look forward to hearing your thoughts at the cabinet meeting this afternoon.
July 11, 1865, recipient Edwin M. Stanton, Secretary of War, from the Office of the President, memo, reconstruction proposal, message.
Mr. Secretary, please be advised the following alterations are included in the reconstruction plan contained herein for your review.
Number one,
the power to appoint and oversee provisional military governors will no longer reside with the Secretary of War. All provisional military governors will be selected and overseen by the Office of the President.
Number two.
The administering of loyalty oaths and land confiscation will no longer reside with the Freedmen's Bureau and will now be overseen by the White House.
Number three.
Any previous sale of rebel lands is now deemed null and void. All confiscated lands are to be seized from the freedmen and returned to their original owners. I look forward to your reply. Sincerest regards, President Andrew Johnson.
Mr. President, I'm begging you, please, reconsider.
Sorry, Mr. Langston. I truly am. But this is one knot I can't untie. I've ordered the military to seize those lands. I cannot reverse course.
Mr. President, violence is erupting all across the South, from Texas to Florida.
I've read the reports, Mr. Langston. The provisional governors have been ordered to arrest the troublemakers. We'll get this sorted out, don't you worry.
People are dying, sir.
Let's not be hysterical, Mr. Langston.
Hysterical, Mr. President?
The Union boys down there are good soldiers. Give them time. They'll take care of the Negroes, you have my word.
If you are not moved by the violence being perpetrated against the freedmen, then consider your own people, sir. This measure will render the Bureau insolvent. Are you truly willing to strip from the poor whites the benefits of the Freedmen's Bureau?
You know, nobody ever handed me anything, Mr. Langston. What I have, I had to take. If I was thirsty, I didn't sit around waiting on somebody to pour me a nip. I rolled up my sleeves, grabbed life's udders, and gave them a squeeze. That is the spirit of this country. See, the thing is, I'm not entirely convinced the poor whites in the South, the people like where I come from, want these handouts from the Freedmen's Bureau. They don't trust the government, and frankly, I don't blame them. Would you trust somebody who took your lands away from you?
That is precisely what you're doing to the freedmen right now, sir.
Now that's where you're wrong. Those lands never belonged to the freedmen, and my greatest failure as president is making you people think otherwise.
What about your legacy, Mr. President? Will you break your promise like Jackson?
The promise wasn't mine. It was Stanton's. The poor whites don't want to be treated in the same class as the Negro, Mr. Langston. I feel for your people down South. I truly do. I feel for anyone who's hurt on account of a decision I make. But I stand by my decision. And now you're going to have to toe the mark. I won't throw the baby out with the bathwater on account of a couple of bad apples below the Mason-Dixon.
Mr. President, the violence is
what
rampant.
I will do is order Stanton to deploy more troops, to shore up the areas in need of additional support. For now, I'm afraid that's the best I can do. Will that be all?
Sir, please, the freedmen have no one to protect
Mr.
them.
Mr. Langston, will that be all?
Yes, Mr. President.
Edwin.
William.
How are you, friend?
Come to rake me over the coals? Punish me on account of Mary Surratt?
Punishment is between you and God.
Why are you here, then?
The president wants to see you in his office right away.
Oh, are you his messenger boy now?
Did you hear what I said? The president is demanding your audience.
To fire me?
No. He's decided to keep you on.
Why?
I don't know. He must have his reasons.
And his conditions.
Go to him, Edwin.
I won't grovel.
Do not be a fool.
Tell the president he can do as he likes, but I will never bend the knee.
You told me once that when your father died, he was destitute.
Yes?
You told me he left your mother nothing, not even a penny.
I hated him for it.
Do you share the same ire for yourself? Do you have anything to leave Ellen? Do you have anything to leave your children at all?
I've grown weary of this conversation.
From what I hear, your personal finances are in ruin.
My personal finances are none of your concern.
You have no savings, no private law practice, no guarantee of a Supreme Court seat waiting for you down the line. You have nothing. Only this office. You failed, Edwin. You gambled with a woman's life, and you came up short. You can't change that. You can only control what you're going to do next. I know what sort of man you are, Edwin. I know what's in your heart.
You don't know me at all. If you did, you would never ask this of me.
Have you asked God for forgiveness, Edwin? Have you repented for your sins?
Every time I close my eyes, I see that woman's face staring back at me. I fear she will haunt me for the rest of my days.
There are 4 million Negroes in the South whose futures hang in the balance of this administration. You may have damned your soul over Mary Surratt. Be certain you don't damn those 4 million innocent souls over your foolish pride. The president has given you a second chance. For the sake of your family and for the sake of what you fought for your entire life, don't squander it.
President?
Mars?
Mr. Seward said you wanted to see me.
Have a seat. That looked familiar to you?
No, sir.
It should. It's a ledger of expenses for the War Department. Mr. Wells secured me a copy. There's one particular line item I thought might interest you. It details a series of payments. Payments made to a young lady of the night named Ella Starr Turner. Now, I'm sure there's a perfectly innocent explanation for the War Department paying off federal witnesses, but I think you can admit it certainly doesn't look good, especially for the person who authorized the payments. Whose signature is that down there at the bottom, Mars?
It is mine, sir.
Now, see, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking the people of the South are good, God-fearing people. I'm thinking they'll forgive me my indiscretion. You think they'll forgive you?
It doesn't matter what I think, Mr. President.
You like stories, don't you, Stanton? I know you like telling them. It's a rare occasion you find yourself on the receiving end of one of mine. Will you indulge me?
Yes, sir.
General Sam Houston, among many other things, was an authoritative drunk. He attacked a member of Congress, a fellow by the name of Stanberry, beat him within an inch of his life with a hickory cane right there in broad daylight. Houston was arrested, tried by Congress, found guilty, and reprimanded for his crimes. Needless to say, President Jackson was none too happy. You see, there'd already been friction between them on account of Jackson's treatment of the Indian tribes. Houston promised them land, a promise Andrew Jackson was not willing to keep. Sound familiar?
Yes.
In the wake of the trial, a lot of folks were saying, Mr. President, that man, Sam Houston, is a liability to you and the Democratic Party. Send him packing. But President Jackson was wise. He understood that despite their disagreements, General Houston was a good soldier.
So he forgave Sam his public display of tomfoolery, and he forgave him the damage he had done to the Democratic Party. But before he forgave him, Houston had to do his part first. Damn near had to prostrate himself before the president and beg for forgiveness. Had to get down on his hands and knees and kiss the ring. Are you prepared to kiss the ring, Stanton?
Yes, sir.
I haven't been clear with you, so let me be clear now. From this point forward, you will be a good soldier for my presidency. You will fall in line. And if you ever try to hold Ella Starr over my head again, look at me, Stanton. I will put you out to goddamn pasture once and for all. Are we clear? Say it so I know you understand.
We are clear.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
1865 is sponsored by Away. In a few days, I'll be traveling to beautiful Orlando for a podcast convention. Before then, of course, I'll have to pack. Packing is not only trying to get everything to fit, but maximizing efficiency and access, because it's the tiny details, the thoughtful planning, and small conveniences that can make a trip enjoyable. And it certainly helps to have great luggage. Your bags are literally holding everything together on your trip, so make sure they're lightweight but durable and full of the small innovations and features that make your travel smooth. So going with me to Orlando is my Away, the perfect suitcase, thoughtfully designed, durable, with features to keep you organized and on the go. With Away, getting in and out of the airport is a breeze because the four 360-degree wheels glide effortlessly. Mine also has a built-in but removable wireless charger battery, so I'm not always hunting for an outlet, and has locks that the TSA won't question. Plus, I know that Away will fix or replace my suitcase ASAP if anything ever breaks. Find out what luggage should be. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/1865 and use promo code 1865 during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/1865, promo code 1865, for $20 off your next best suitcase.
Thank you for spending your afternoon here at the White House. I reckon you've all got more important places to be. I promise to be brief. Now, normally, making speeches is not my cup of tea. I tend to go on and on and on, as you well know. But if you'll indulge me, gentlemen, I have a short prepared statement I would like to read. Whereas a vindictive policy, attended by unnecessary penalties, confiscations, and disenfranchisements, could only hinder reconciliation among the people, it is now deemed essential that pardon should be liberally extended. With this pen, I, Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, do hereby proclaim and declare full pardon to all persons who, directly or indirectly, participated in the late rebellion,
with the restoration of all privileges, immunities, and rights of property.
Mr. Langston?
Mr. Stanton? May I come in?
Of course, of course. Forgive my unsightly appearance. I was not expecting company. I offer you anything?
No, thank you. It's a nice robe.
Yeah, I don't much care for it myself, but Mrs. Stanton gave it to me as a gift on our anniversary last. Needless to say, I wear it as often as possible.
I thought you didn't care for it.
You know, I forgot the anniversary. I'm trying to make amends.
Is Mrs. Stanton home?
No, she's gone out for the grocery.
I'm sorry to drop in on you like this, unannounced. I tried you at the War Department, but your man there, Marshal McPhail, he said you haven't been in the office.
I'm taking a few days.
More than a few, it seems. He says you've been out all week.
What can I do for you, Mr. Langston?
When are you returning to your office?
Johnson struck me from the reconstruction plan.
Yes, I'm aware.
Much good my office will do me now.
It won't do anyone any good if you won't fight for it. The freedmen are being driven from their
lands.
He's
cut me off at the knees. I have no power.
Then take it back. Have you been reading General Howard's daily reports?
Marshal McPhail delivers them every morning.
Then I don't have to tell you what's happening down there.
It's an atrocity.
For God's sake, stop feeling sorry for yourself and do something about it.
The tribunal failed. I failed to convict the South of the conspiracy. Amnesty is the law of the land. There's nothing more I can do.
There's always more to be done. Pick up the sword and start fighting.
I am tired of fighting. I fought Mr. Lincoln's unbearable prudence. I fought to smite our enemy and unify this country. I've cajoled and threatened, suborned and battled my way through an unrelenting barrage of Andrew Johnson's insidiousness. The cost has been tremendous. My wife hardly looks at me, much less speaks to me a kind or gentle word. I barely know my children. My health is failing me. Every breath I draw is a struggle and feels more and more every day like it'll be my last. I have sacrificed everything, Mr. Langston. What more do you want from me?
I want what I was promised! You say you've read General Howard's reports? Have you seen the one from this morning?
No.
A few days back, down near the coast of Texas, a young boy, a freedman, was fishing beside a creek on his family's brand new plot of land, a plot of land given to them by the Freedmen's Bureau. A lone rider came upon the boy. This man, the former landowner, was a slave driver before the war. He demanded to speak to the boy's parents. The boy explained his father had gone to town and assured the man he'd be back shortly. The slaver instructed the boy to vacate the property. The boy was confused. He told the man he should wait for his father to come home. The slaver drew down on the boy and shot him. The doctors amputated his arm to try and spare his life, but there was nothing to be done. He died just before dawn.
How old was he, the boy?
16. The freedmen have nothing but the promises you've made. This is just the beginning, Mr. Stanton. Many more freedmen are going to die. Will you go back on your word and abandon them? Or will you pick up your sword and fight?
I can subvert Johnson from the shadows, Mr. Langston, but I can't be seen to challenge him, not openly, not right now anyway. To keep my office, I need to play the part of a loyal servant, but Congress can take the fight right to his doorstep, and so can you.
Tell me what to do when it's done.
A wise man once said, when the sword fails, use a pen.
July 28th, 1865. to all relevant Bureau personnel from the desk of John Mercer Langston. Message. General Howard has issued a directive titled Circular 13, contained herein. Freeman's Bureau agents are hereby ordered to prioritize the congressional mandate for land distribution over President Johnson's unlawful amnesty order. Any pardon issued by the President, past, present, or future, will not be understood to extend to the surrender of abandoned or confiscated land, which by law has been set apart for refugees and freedmen. Sincerely, John Mercer Langston, Bureau Inspector General.
September 12, 1865, from the Office of the War Department. To all Freedmen's Bureau personnel, message. President Johnson has issued Circular 15, effectively nullifying General Howard's previous directive. The President has instructed the military to proceed with the repossession and return of southern lands to their former owners. Edwin M. Stanton, Secretary of War.
November 11, 1865, from Congressman John Bingham to Senator Charles Sumner. Senator, the recent elections in the South to reestablish the local Southern governments have produced a troubling, albeit predictable, result. The South has, by and large, elected former Confederate leaders to hold public office.
November 28, 1865. General Howard, since shortly after the elections, these newly minted officials have begun establishing what is now colloquially called the Black Codes. There is much speculation about whether the Freedmen's Bureau will be able to survive this turn of events at all.
December 1st, 1865, to all relevant military personnel. President Johnson has officially declared Reconstruction complete and the Union restored. More than 60 Southern congressmen are en route to Washington City to reclaim their seats in the House of Representatives.
December 4th, 1865. Mr. President, we do not recognize the validity of the Southern elections or their results. Among those attempting to join the Congress are four Confederate generals, four colonels, and six cabinet officers, as well as Mr. Alexander H. Stevens, the former vice president of the Confederacy. After consulting my own conscience and that of my fellow Republican congressmen, we have decided not to seat the distinguished gentleman from below the Mason-Dixon.
February 19, 1866. General Howard, be advised, President Johnson today vetoed the renewal of the Freedmen's Bill. The reason that the former Confederate states had no representatives in the Congress which enacted the law. A copy of a memorandum detailing your remaining powers is attached herein.
General, the Civil Rights Bill of 1866 has passed the Senate.
Mr. President, the Civil Rights Bill of 1866 has passed the House and awaits your signature.
Mr. Bingham, the Civil Rights Bill has been vetoed by the President as it establishes safeguards for the colored race which go infinitely beyond any that have ever been provided for the white race. In fact, the distinction of race by the bill is made to operate in favor of the colored and against the white race.
The Senate has passed the Civil Rights Bill of 1866 over the veto of the President.
The House has passed the Civil Rights Bill of 1866 over the veto of the President and is now the law of the land.
April 2nd, the President has proclaimed the rebellion closed and the insurrectionary states back in the Union as before.
May 29th, Congress has passed over the President's veto a new Freedmen's Bill expanding the power of the Bureau to allow agents to prosecute civil rights offenders in a military tribunal.
June 1866.
The 14th Amendment has passed the Senate.
The 14th Amendment has passed the House.
The 14th Amendment has been sent to the states for ratification. Edwin M. Stanton, Secretary of War.
Weekly Press and Times, August 4, 1866. New Orleans Democrats mob a union convention, leading unionists beaten and killed. On July 30, 1866, as those friendly to the ratification of the Civil Rights Amendment met at the Louisiana Convention, a group of armed rebels led by General Harvey Hayes attacked a large party of Negro protesters who were marching peaceably in support of the amendment. The freedmen were surrounded, beaten, and killed. It is estimated that there have been at least 150 casualties, 44 dead.
Mr. Bingham, Mr. Seward.
Stanton.
Edwin, come in. Have you seen the news?
Yes, God help us. It's a tragedy. Wish there was something we could do.
Well, there is. Have a seat.
Let me spare you the trouble. Johnson hasn't broken the law, Stanton.
He's emboldened these people. He sat idly by while the southern states passed black code after black code. He even paroled Jefferson Davis, who now, to my disgust, gets to slither out into the sunlight every day. And what is Johnson doing right now at this very moment? Touring the South, giving long, rambling speeches, embracing for a vote the very racist bigots who are gunning down innocent freedmen in the streets.
Mr. Bingham is right. What's happening down South is a tragedy, but until Johnson breaks the law, there's nothing to be done.
Yes, there is.
What are you proposing?
We use the legislature to kill amnesty.
How?
I need Congress to pass a Reconstruction bill that overrides Johnson's amnesty order and solidifies Lincoln's Reconstruction policy in stone.
You're hanging on by a thread, Stanton. Once he learns you're pulling the strings on this, Johnson will fire you.
Well, there's more.
What's this?
I call it the Tenure of Office Act. This bill states the president cannot fire any public servant the Senate has approved without senatorial consent.
Meaning you?
Meaning me. He won't be able to fire me, not without breaking the law.
He'll do it anyway.
I'm counting on it, gentlemen. And when he does, we impeach.
"1865" is an Airship production, starring Jeremy Schwartz as Edwin Stanton. Also featuring R. Bruce Elliott, J. Michael Tatum, William Jackson Harper, Sean Hannigan, and Robert McCullough. Created by Stephen Walters and Eric Archilla. Directed by Robert McCullough. Written by Stephen Walters. Executive producer, Lindsey Graham. Co-executive producers, Eric Archilla, Robert McCullough, and Stephen Walters. Music and sound design by Lindsey Graham. To find out more about 1865, go to 1865podcast.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter at 1865podcast. And if you're a fan of the show, please consider supporting us. Become a patron at patreon.com/1865podcast. New episodes air weekly, and look for special inside-the-episode interviews with the writers and producers of the series to find out more about the real history behind 1865.